You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
What we eat, drink, and breathe, our stress levels, our use of pharmaceuticals, our interaction with the immediate physical and social environment, these are essential factors in genetic expression. Rather than worrying about the genetic hand we are dealt, we must optimize our health by the choices we make. And to talk about these healthy choices is our guest today, Dr. Kenneth Pelletier. Kenneth R. Pelletier is an integrative medicine pioneer and clinical professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco School of Medicine, and former clinical professor of medicine at Stanford School of Medicine. He's the director of the Corporate Health Improvement Program known by the acronym CHIP, which is a collaborative research program between CHIP and 15 Fortune 500 corporations. He's a peer reviewer for several medical journals, including the Journal of Occupational and Environmental Medicine, and is vice president with American Specialty Health. He's the author of many books, including Mind as Healer, Mind as Slayer, A Holistic Approach to Preventing Stress Disorder, and Change Your Genes, Change Your Life, Creating Optimal Health with the New Science of Epigenetics. Join us for the next hour as we explore the era of personalized medicine with our guest, Dr. Kenneth Pelletier. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Ken, welcome.
Oh, thank you. I've been looking forward to our conversation.
Me too. Thank you so much for being part of it. I'd like to start. You've done a lot of research and you collected a lot of research on the Human Genome Project. And you say that mapping, which we've been able to do, mapping the human genome is only one step in the revolution of healthcare. So can you please explain?
Yes, the Human Genome Mapping Project was really like creating an alphabet. So we now know the alphabet of the human genetic code. What remains is how does that alphabet create words? How do those words become sentences? How do the sentences become paragraphs? And how do we interpret that code? And what makes it even more complex is that the code is not fixed. The code changes, and that gets us into the more recent research in the epigenetic era where we're looking at interpreting the ever-changing genome.
Well, if with our genes, you're saying that they're not deterministic in their expressions. And so you mentioned epigenetics. So how does this all work together?
For the general public, and I think for most people in health and medicine, the gene is fixed. It's like we assume that it's like the hard drive in a computer, that it gives us our height, eye color, weight, gender, what diseases we will contract, how long we will live, which is a very important variable. The problem is that's not at all accurate. Only 5% of what we see in adulthood has to do with what are called monogenic or fully penetrant genes, where they are really, in fact, deterministic, like the rules on a hard drive. What is much more accurate is that for the other 95%, what we're looking at is what we call gene expression. So the gene is like a push in a direction, and then the epigenetic factors are things like stress, diet, exercise, the environment, our social relationships with each other. That determines whether a push in a particular direction is going to be expressed, i.e. be evident, or if it's going to be suppressed and, in fact, never show up, even though we have a genetic push in a particular direction. So the epigenesis is the new science in the last 10 years, which really focuses on the changes that our lifestyle makes in expressing the gene.
So if we know that and we want to have help with that, let's say with our healthcare services, you have a view about healthcare in the state of healthcare right now. So if all of this new information is coming in, where are we with our healthcare right now? If we have an HMO or a doctor or whatever?
Well, it's a great question. I think where I see the future is that we are evolving into a healthcare system. I mean, right now, today, we refer to the system of medical care as a healthcare system, but that's a complete misnomer. And this is not pejorative. What we really have is a disease management industry. Disease has always been the province of medicine. The management of disease follows from that. And at one-tenth of the U.S. economy, it's definitely an industry or a business. So what we have right now is a disease management industry. What we're evolving into is a true healthcare system, and it's based on care and based on health that is predictable, that is proactive, and that really depends on having things be personalized. So the real impact of epigenesis is that it's no longer one diet fits all or one form of meditation fits all. What we will find out is exactly what we need biochemically in order to optimize our health and optimize our longevity. So the future of medicine is much more in healthcare. And true healthcare is much more personalized.
But, you know, Ken, we're kind of bucking a whole economic system. I mean, for example, just recently, Goldman Sachs, which is a large and influential investment firm, has given a report to some of its investors that, okay, let's not go invest in curing disease because it's not economically profitable. And so the profit has power, and so we're really bucking a pretty big system there, wouldn't you say?
Well, there really are two approaches, and if you apply this philosophy and difference, are we focused on disease cure or are we focused on health enhancement and longevity? And the model that at least is in my book and the model that I have spent my career doing is really focused on optimizing health. And to be sure, there's an enormous amount of investment. There's an enormous amount of money and profit to be made in medical care. The United States is the most expensive system in the world in terms of medical care. And yet on outcomes, it ranks 37th 37th in the world, our outcomes in terms of heart disease, suicide, homicide rate, cancer deaths ranks the same as Bosnia. So we're number 37 in the world with the largest expenditure of medical care. The reality is, even though it may be profitable, it is literally impossible, and it's becoming rapidly impossible to manage that amount of disease with an increasing amount of the national budget and all the other things that are not being funded, like homes, food, care for the elderly, basic medical care services for those 30 million people who don't have any health care. That's all being sacrificed in the name of disease management. So we're being forced to consider, how can we prevent disease? And we know, again, statistically, somewhere around 80 to as much as 85% of all disease is entirely preventable. And yet we're only spending less than 2 or 3% of our annual budget in the prevention of disease. So it's not a matter of sheer dollars or even profitability. It's a matter of misallocation of limited resources.
Got it. Okay. So you mentioned, going back to something you mentioned earlier about no one size fits all, and I know that you have stated in your book, Change Your Genes, Change Your Life, there is no mythical average human. I love that. So you're saying that we really need to pay attention to our own individualized needs and the way our own body is working. Is that right?
Correct. And even anatomically, every human heart is different. Every human stomach is different. Every human body is, in fact, as different as our fingerprints. Where we are at this point in time is we're on the edge of discovering our own unique biochemistry. And there are assays that can help us identify our unique genetic, blood, and biomic or intestinal tract biochemistry. Once we know that, then the question about which diet is best, which stress management technique is best, which environmental factors are really impacting our health, that becomes very clear because we know who we are. And right now, we're just adrift in a barrage of conflicting dietary recommendations of every conceivable kind of stress management technique. But we don't know if any of those really fit us or are, in fact, appropriate or produce health. I had a patient who came in and was on a carrot juice diet and had and was feeling absolutely awful. Turned out that he had a major carotene allergy. So he was literally poisoning himself with a product or the supposedly healthy consumption that was actually making him more ill. So until we know who we are, we don't make very good choices.
And Ken, mostly when we go to a doctor these days, we get we have a lab test and they take our blood. So they do a blood sample. And you're talking about a whole, you call genetic assay or genetic evaluation, which includes quite a bit because it includes your individual genetic. You suggest that you also do your blood chemistry, but you do it a little bit differently than just taking one sample, I think. And then the third one is your intestinal tract, which is a big deal. So I'm going to get into those in just one moment. And I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Dr. Kenneth Pelletier. He's the author of Change Your Genes, Change Your Life, Creating Optimal Health with the New Science of Epigenetics. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website. It's drpelletier.com, and he spells that doctor, he abbreviates it, drpelletier, pelletier.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Kenneth Pelletier, and he's the author of Change Your Genes, Change Your Life, Creating Optimal Health with the New Science of Epigenetics. Ken, we were just talking about these genetic assays or genetic evaluations that you recommend. And so let's kind of go through them, because they're very different than just a single blood test that you go to and get for your doctor. How's it different?
Well, any really complete mapping of our individual genetic and biochemical makeup really needs four components. And these four components look at markers that are far beyond the ordinary laboratory values we get in an annual physical. And these four components are genetics. So a cheek swab will give you a genetic profile. And it's actually now as inexpensive to map your entire human genome than it is just to look for particular aspects of your genetic inheritance. So that's kind of the fixed component, looking at the gene itself. What are we born with? It's like a blueprint for a house. The second thing is then blood, or the CBC, or complete blood chemistry. If you have an annual physical, you probably get, maybe a dozen blood markers. And the genetic assays really look at upwards of 80 to 100 blood markers, subfractions that are very predictive of certain diseases, very predictive of health, and gives you information on what you can do to modify that. And the third is the biome, or the intestinal tract. This is the newest and trickiest part of this. I would guess there are something like 300 colonies in the intestinal tract that contain trillions of cells each. So there are more cells between your mouth and your anus than there is in the entire human body. And if you include the reproductive organs in women, that number is even higher. And right now, there are a few companies that are capable of interpreting the biomic assay as the third part of this profile. But it's rather like hieroglyphics before the Rosetta Stone. It's hard to interpret exactly what this complex system means, and it's instantaneously changing. So the fourth component, once you have these three assays, is then discussions with a genetic counselor. And this is someone who knows how to interpret the results. And again, these are very complex systems. They're in constant change. And you need someone with experience and knowledge to help you really understand what is the meaning behind all these numbers and displays.
So I know that there are some really very popular kind of genetic things. Let's say 23andMe would be an example. So what about these that are very popular?
Right. There are about 20 or 25 companies that provide various forms of genetic testing. There are more every day. Literally, in my email, I get an advertisement for a company, a new startup company in genetic testing, at least once. So the word is out, and the problem is that most of them are quite honestly junk. They are not accurate, they're not individualized, and their predictions really are simply statistical. They say you've got a 40% likelihood of irritable bowel syndrome. Well, what does that really tell you? It doesn't tell you anything about the other people who have the identical profile you do that fall into the 60% who don't get an irritable bowel as a result of this genetic push. So to me, that's the critical question is, what can we do if we're aware of a risk? What can we do to avoid that risk and move toward optimal health? So the same technology in genetics is either for disease prediction or for what we call healthy biomarkers. So the 23andMe is really in the disease prediction side of that. It tells you about 10 conditions which are known to have high push toward genetic likelihood of manifesting that disease. The problem is, again, even if you have an 80% likelihood of a particular disease, it does not tell you specifically, is that your risk or is that just a general risk? And what about the 20% who don't? So I object. I have concerns about that. It creates a lot of worry and anxiety for people, and they're not terribly accurate. The other approach, and some companies are doing this, we can discuss which four or five companies are doing a good job, really look at healthy biomarkers. So if we were having this conversation 5 years ago, and you asked, do you know your cholesterol level? Most people wouldn't. Today, almost everyone knows their cholesterol. So cholesterol is an example of a biomarker. So it's a number that tells you some part of your own body chemistry is high or low relative to a normal range. And what the epigenetic testing does is says, okay, if it's high, here's what you can do to bring it into the normal range. If it's low, here's what you can do to raise it into a normal range. The more of these healthy biomarkers that we bring into an optimal range for health and longevity, then we're really developing a health system personally and collectively.
So this you're talking about, we're really like a bacteria hotel. We're walking around like with all of this bacteria, and much of it is really good for us. It's a good symbiotic relationship, and then there may be some that are not. So when we find that we're developing a symptom, let's say you mentioned irritable bowel. Okay, so here, let's say we have that. There are all sorts of ads for all these drugs, and they're very, very provocative, and they're very seductive. So what would you say about, like, taking drugs for that or for your cholesterol?
Well, it's a very good question, and I'm not anti-pharmacology by any stretch. I mean, our pharmacology is really, in most cases, excellent. The problem is we tend to overuse it. We tend to use pharmacology at very high dosages, and that produces side effects, which then have to be corrected by other pharmacologies. So pharmacology is not bad if it's used in low dosages when it's clearly indicated by the diagnosis and it's well tolerated and doesn't produce side effects. The problem is very few of our drugs really fall into that category. The greatest challenge is even if a person is on, say, a statin drug to control their cholesterol, the question is, what can you do in terms of diet or stress or exercise or any number of other factors that will, in fact, bring your cholesterol within a normal range? That's the more challenging thing right now. And the problem with the pharmacology model is if you think about a television advertisement, it's a perfect pharmacology model. The advertisement comes on, describes a condition. It's usually having to do with depression, so it's yellow teeth or it's bad breath or whatever it happens to be. So it diagnoses a condition. Then it gives you an external solution. If you use this toothbrush, if you use this food, if you buy this car, then the third stage is an immediate resolution. You're happy, you've got friends, you're symptom-free, you have a wonderful life, and everything is fine. So in 60 seconds, you have a diagnosis, you have a cure from the outside of yourself that produces a healthy outcome. The problem is when we look at that message over and over, hundreds if not thousands of times in a week, it creates the illusion that the external pharmacology, the external car, the external diet is the solution to an internally challenging problem. What we're doing with the epigenetics area is turning it around and saying, what do we need to do internally before we rely on pharmacology or before we determine which pharmacology is really a best fit for us? So that's really the challenge.
You know, I would think anybody, for me, if I watch one of those ads, the legality is that they have to also say, well, you may have these side effects. And then they whip through all these side effects. And I'm thinking to myself, my goodness, are you kidding me? I'm going to subject myself to those side effects possibly. For me, it says I'm not going to touch those.
Well, it's even a misnomer when we casually refer to those undesirable as side effects. What they are is primary effects that are undesirable. So these are not side effects, like you're getting this great benefit. And oh, by the way, up to and including death might be a side effect. Those are primary undesirable side effects of a pharmacology. And again, in our research, we found that over the years, if you use low-dose pharmacology, if people use them appropriately over time and engage in all the other lifestyle changes they need to do to regulate a condition, that's the optimal approach to health and longevity.
So what are some of the caveats, again, going back to the caveats of direct-to-consumer genetic testing? What would you say we should watch for if we're going to try to go in that way and find something suitable for us?
Well, the biggest caveat is to remember that it's a statistical prediction. It does not mean that you as an individual are in fact doomed or in fact free of a particular risk. So that's the biggest caveat of all, to recognize that these are all statistical predictions. If you get all three, the gene, the blood, the biome, and couple that with the genetic counselor, then you've got something that's individually predictive, but it also includes what you can do. And this is critical. And I think that's what's missing in the over-the-counter genetic testing, which is it does not provide you with adequate information about what you can do to reduce your risk or enhance your particular predisposition. So those are the two biggest factors. Remember, it's statistical. And secondly, to work with a counselor using high-quality analyses to really then figure out what you can do to optimize your health and longevity.
So, Ken, as we are moving more towards preventive medicine or personalized medicine rather than disease care medicine, it's not covered by insurance, so people have to pay out of pocket. So is this affordable to get these four measures and be able to talk to someone who's capable of helping us?
That, again, that's a very good question. One is insurance companies are increasingly going to be covering these kinds of assays. In fact, I'm consulting with two national insurance companies that are actually beginning to develop a life insurance policy that will look at these four markers, these four areas, and say to you, you have a risk for heart disease. Here's what you can do about it. If you engage in our programs to reduce your risk, we will reduce the cost of your life insurance premium. So it's a true risk sharing on the part of the insurance company and the person buying the policy. So this is coming. This is within the next year or two. I think we'll actually, you know, see these in the marketplace. Now, the cost of the genetic tests, they range literally from a few hundred dollars for, again, all three and a counselor to over $25,000. So the range is from hundreds of dollars to $25,000. There are four or five companies that for around $200 will provide the four tests that we just talked about. Now,
okay, I'm going to have to interrupt you. We're going to take a break, but let's come right back to that point in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Dr. Kenneth Pelletier, and he's the author of Change Your Genes, Change Your Life. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter hour New Dimensions